Hi, everyone. It's Angela with the podcast Refocus with Angela Stevens. I just wanted to send a short note to everyone that might be finding themselves working from home. You might normally work from home, or this might be really new to you. I know that we're all going through a transition and trying to understand more of this epidemic of what's really happening. And I'm sure there's some uncertainty, but I do want to leave you with this. My favorite saying ever is, what I fear, I create. And I know that there may be things that are happening, but if we let our mind take course, then it becomes worse because then we have a ton of anxiety on us. So for all of you that have found yourself working from home, I've done that for years. I've had people that have worked for me remotely that worked from home. I've placed people with our search firm that have worked from home. And I know a lot of tips and tricks that maybe you might find helpful because not only you're home, but probably your family is at home as well. So this four-part series is going to cover a lot of things. I hope you find this is helpful. Our hearts go out to everyone. Be safe, be healthy, and much love to you all. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so excited about these two gentlemen that we are going to interview today. They've actually been friends for a very long time, but they've lived in different locations. But as you know, we've been doing a series on tips for working from home. And the unique thing about these two gentlemen is that they have worked remotely, they've worked on site, they've worked internationally, and I think you're going to be really excited to learn more about them. So today we have our guests are two gentlemen. One of them is Christian Becker. He is the founding managing partner of BNC Management Group, LLC, and he's also a partner at Becker Cizik Equities. We also have Daryl Sauber, who is the director of business development for Dairy Farmers of America, and he has a long history with Tetra Pak. So gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So first of all, it's interesting because I know a little bit about you both, and I know some of the things that you've done and some of the things you haven't done. So both of you have worked remotely, and I think, are you working remotely now?
Yeah, temporarily until the stay-at-home orders are lifted.
Okay.
And then there'll be a gradual transition into a combination office environment and work-from-home situation. But it's challenging right now just because nobody knows what that's going to look like, how the office environment is going to work, and how we're going to make the work from home sync up with the office environment. So there's a lot of questions that are still happening, but over the course of May, from what I understand, they'll work all that out. And then starting in June, we'll probably have some combination of in the office or work from home.
Got it. Daryl, what about you?
Yes, the same as well. I'm working from home due to the coronavirus. We have only essential personnel that are allowed in our plants and manufacturing facilities at the moment. So right now, all employees that are not necessary to be at the office are working from home. And then when we get the call back to come back into the office, once again, as Christian said, it'll kind of be to figure out, you know, okay, how are we doing this back in and how's it all going to work out?
It's interesting because in your field, I do know that you work with plants around the country. So I know a lot of listeners are probably curious about what about the plants? What about those individuals that have to go to work at a plant every day? Are they there? Is that something that is essential that they have to do?
Yes, our manufacturing facilities are open and we're taking the necessary precautions that are required to keep everybody safe.
Got it. So a lot of people are probably thinking, okay, I've heard these titles, and so we want to know a little bit more about you both. So Christian, I'm going to start with you. So you are the founding managing partner of BNC Management Group, LLC. What is that?
So it's a small business. It's essentially me and one or two other people, depending on the assignment. But essentially what I provide is consulting service with specific focus on IT program management for anything from Fortune 500 to companies to smaller businesses. And my objective is really to help companies, develop and implement large scale IT programs. And those can be policy and procedure related. They can be software related. They can be people and process related. But essentially, I'm usually engaged in a consulting time frame for a given period of time with specific goals and objectives. And It's generally very time frame focused. So if a company, for example, purchases a software product, they want to implement that and roll it out across all of their facilities. And they also need help, generally speaking, with what we call timeline development, program management. So once the initial software package, for example, is installed, how do they enhance that? How do they continue to make it better? And how do they continue to gain more value out of it over some period of time? So that's the consulting aspect of it. Right. And then the other company that I have is a real estate business, which essentially is, you know, buying and selling of real estate, investing of real estate. So it's, if you, you know, it's like a small version of Remax. And we, I have a partner that does that with us, and we essentially buy and sell residential properties for, you know, other people that are looking for a home. Pretty simple.
Interesting. You really have that entrepreneurial drive. And so have you done that most of your life?
No, I believe it or not, I kind of fell into it. I had a series of corporate jobs, you know, both on the consulting side and in, you know, working for a corporation. And then during the financial crisis, when a lot of people were either unemployed or had to make some career transitions, I was kind of faced with the same challenge. And at that point in time, there was an opportunity and the desire from my perspective to try something new and go out on my own in these consulting type of assignments. And my initial objective really was to do this for, let's call it, you know, 6 to 12 months until the overall economy improved and the job market improved. And that was 10 years ago. And I wouldn't change it. And I've enjoyed it. It's both challenging, but rewarding as well. There's a lot of flexibility, and it's really been a positive. And you know, it's scary initially for anybody that's tried to go out on their own. But if I had to do it over again, I would probably say I would have done it 10 years earlier.
You're a lot braver man than
I was. No, that's great. I was going to say, and then Daryl, talk to us about your job, because a lot of people, you know, when they hear DFA, they have a lot of, you know, they immediately think of, you know, the dairy industry. Can you kind of talk a little bit about your company and then also what you do specifically?
Well, Dairy Farmers of America is a co-op, so mm-hmm. the farmers own the business. And what we essentially do is find a home for the milk. Mm-hmm. So there's several sections within DFA. The section that I'm in is in the beverage side. Mm-hmm. So I work with brand owners, entrepreneurs about developing beverages with a team of food scientists, where then we produce those beverages in our manufacturing facilities. I get a literally lot of close attention and one-on-one action with entrepreneurs and people that are, you know, ready to take that plunge into the world and take that chance in the hopes of hitting a big payday.
And that is actually very difficult, right? There's a lot of people who want to create beverages, and the success rate of that is very small, right?
Yeah. So, you know, of course there's many types of different entrepreneurs, but in the beverage world, yeah, it's a very, very tough road to take. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff that you have to understand in the industry, just how to get your products in, a lot of expenses. There's only a success rate of about 2%. So mm-hmm. about 98% of all beverages that start up, you know, will usually die in a few years.
But you work with them from start to finish until you see that product on the shelf, correct?
Yeah, we'll start from the very start. Yeah, I mean, it could be just the first phone call where they say, you know, hey, I've got this idea and I have no idea how to go from it further.
Okay.
And so we'll take them by the hand and walk them through the whole process and help them create a beverage and give them a finished product and let them go sell it, which to me, as I've said many times, that's the easiest part, getting them a product that they want and that they like. The hardest part is for them to go out and sell it.
And that's the exciting part, is when you see that success, right? I mean, you see people, you know, have this dream and then they go after
There's
it.
There's success and also frustration. I mean, it takes a lot of money to develop products, mm-hmm. you know, but if they only run once or twice, you know, it's definitely that no one makes money. They don't make money and we don't make money. So mm-hmm. you want the brand to be successful. But it's totally up to the brand owner to make it successful.
Right. Then before that, you were at Tetra Pak, and I believe you were there for 20 years. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And I want to get into your education in a moment, Christian, but Daryl, you are by trade a mechanical engineer,
yes.
Correct? And then you actually moved into the business development world. So talk to us a little bit, first of all, who is Tetra Pak? What did they do? And then talk to us about your role and how that changed.
Well, so Tetra Pak is a privately owned company, really very big company. I think last time I knew, and it's been a while, so I've been out of the company now for 10 years. At one time, I know they were in about 206 countries, no, maybe 169, something like that. They're global. Basically, they make packaging in machines to make shelf-stable products. So think the more realistic one is milk. They'll put milk in a fiber-based package. Do it aseptically so that it's shelf stable, so you don't need refrigeration. This is very big over in Europe. It's big in other countries. America never has grabbed a hold of it. Refrigeration has always been really big in America. Refrigerators are big. Fresh milk was always a thing there, and aseptic milk never just took hold. Americans didn't want to take it, didn't want to drink it. So.
And not to interrupt, but if anyone's listening to this, I've heard you explain it that it's the cartons, like the juice box cartons, right, for Tetra Pak?
Yeah, I mean, basically for Tetra Pak, mm-hmm. think of the little juice box carton, the box that you
got
just smash a straw through.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I started out with the company there as a field service engineer. So utilizing my engineering degree, went around, worked on equipment, did preventive maintenance on the machines, did breakdown service. Traveled across the country, went over to Europe for about 3 months. Did that for 5 years. After 5 years, you know, finally realized that wasn't for me. The traveling just was a little intense. I mean, usually I was out for 2 to 3 weeks at a time, come home for the weekend, and right back out on the road again. So it's something for a young kid to do, as I was a young kid back then. It's fun for a few years, and then it gets a little old after a while. Then got into the sales side of Tetra Pak, and that's when I was out in California, and that's actually when I worked out of my house. So for 12 years, I worked out of my house. There was no office where I was at. My office was in a different part of the state that I would go to maybe once a month. Otherwise, just work out of one of my bedrooms and, you know, cover a region. I think it was Northern California, then also Colorado, I think Utah, and a couple of the states like that in there.
Got it. So in terms of education, you went to Kansas State, if I could recall.
Yes, Kansas State University.
Awesome. And then, Christian, your education, where did you go to school?
So for undergrad, I went to Purdue and have a background in operations management and industrial engineering, and started out my career in a manufacturing plant, really in on the quality control side and the purchasing and procurement side. And I did that for 3 years, and always in the back of my mind knew that I wanted to go to graduate school for no other reason to diversify my background and really have some different opportunities besides working in a plant environment. So I did that, and I went to graduate school at Notre Dame and got my MBA with a focus in finance. And then coming out of Notre Dame, I spent 5-6 years in heavy finance role as a financial analyst and a finance auditor, and then moved into more of a technology role because I had always had that aptitude and the desire and maybe a skill set, and have been doing more technology-related work the last 10 years, but with a finance flavor for, I would say, 4 or 5 years, and then, like I said, on my own during the summary period for the last 10.
Got it. You know, we're going to talk about working remotely, but before we do that, I want to ask both of you, you know, what was it that led you to the career that you're in? When you were younger and you were in college and you were trying to make this decision of what you were going to do with your life, you know, why did, first of all, Christian, why did you choose to go with the first, you know, 10 years of what you were doing? Why did you choose that path?
So I'd always known that I wanted to do something science and math and technology related, just because I had a general interest, and I genuinely believe that technology is a way to solve business problems. That's the way I look at technology. And, you know, my intent is always to look at a business problem and then try to find technology to make it easier, more efficient, and better. And the key there is to look at a business process. And a lot of people, or some people, try to force technology onto a process that could be better be done manually. So the immediate answer is not always let's apply some technology to the problem, but there's some analysis involved, and there's a lot of industries out there that are highly successful with a manual process, and the technology just wouldn't be appropriate. So that's always been my focus. And that's what I continue to try to do today.
So Daryl, in terms of your career, what was it that really drove you to say, hey, I want to be a mechanical engineer and I want to go work for a company like Tetra Pak? Because if I recall, you come from a family of engineers. And so a lot of people sometimes, and it's not positive or negative, but they will stay in the same area. And what I've noticed about the both of you is you've got really, you're global, you're well-rounded globally. So for you, Daryl, what was it that said, I want to go into this direction?
Well, I mean, and it was, I would say a lot of it was from my brothers and my dad. You know, my dad was an industrial engineer. I have my oldest brother was a packaging engineer. Then I had a mechanical engineer. Then my brother that's closest to me is an electrical engineer. And for me, it was kind of just like, all right, engineering sounds good. I enjoyed working with my hands. I enjoyed working on cars. I enjoyed working on wood. And so it just made sense to me. I didn't know where it was going to take me, but it made sense that, okay, if I'm going to go into college, I definitely don't want to be a finance guy. I don't want, you know, marketing.
You're a problem solver.
Yeah, I wanted to go. That made the most sense. Where it was going to take me, I had no idea. And then honestly, after I graduated, as for Tetra Pak, they were the first company that offered me a job. I'd never heard of Tetra Pak before. And
did you get that at a career fair, or did they recruit you?
No, so I grew up in Kansas, and I wanted to get out of Kansas. I was tired of Kansas, tired of the cold weather, tired of the extremes. And none of my brothers had left Kansas, and I said, I want to get out. I want to see what the rest of the country's like. And so I had a friend that lived down in Dallas, and so I said, I want to, go move down to Dallas. Awesome. And so that's where I was kind of focusing at Dallas, and I hooked up with a headhunter. And they had found Tetra Pak and got me an interview over the phone. And I mean, it was actually quite fast and a long process, call it, because the phone interview went well. They said, come down the next week, which I drove down. And then I had about 5 or 6 interviews, tests, and all kinds of stuff that they all crammed in one day because I drove down. And they liked, what I did at first. And so we got through it all in that first day or that one day. And I got back to my friend's apartment, and the person called me up. A headhunter called me up and said, they want to offer you a job. You want to call the guy back? And so I called him back, and they offered me a job right there, and it was a done deal. And I still didn't really know what Tetra Pak was at that time. Hate to say, but, it was a job. It was a good paying job, and I was going to live in Dallas. So checked all my boxes. And I was like, okay, pack up the stuff, and let's get out of Kansas.
Exciting.
So, yeah.
What is the best thing about your job right now?
For me, it's two things. Number one, it's the flexibility, and I get to see, a lot of different companies and a lot of different ways that people do things. And
you're a problem solver as well in the IT software area, right?
Right. So that's a huge focus, is to continuously solve problems. But for me personally, I get to see a number of different industries. It's flexible. If you get into a bad assignment, which has happened over the last 10 years, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. And it'll be a 6 or 9 month assignment. And once the project is accomplished, whether successfully or just done, I have the option to find a new assignment. So I'm not really stuck, for a lack of a better term, in a position or a company or a job that I don't like. The downside, obviously, is that I have to do my own marketing. I have to find my next assignment on my own. So there's a little bit of pressure to make sure that once an assignment is completed, I have to find something else. Or if there's downtime, I obviously have to manage that. So there's good and bad for both sides. But for me, it's flexibility and the ability to choose my assignment and the companies that I work at.
And you handle that very well, because there's a lot of people in our search firm that I will interview and they will be consultants, but they love doing the work, but they've always got to be looking for the next job.
Right.
And that is almost too stressful for many. So the fact that you can do that well is very impressive. Daryl, what about you? What is the best thing about your job right now?
I love working with entrepreneurs. I love working with brand owners that are developing new products, kind of knowing where the brand wants to go before the rest of the world knows what's to go, where they're going. Mm-hmm. Additionally, you know, I have so much fun at my job, but I have a great team. So no matter what happens, there's always obstacles you got to overcome, but we have a super team, a huge team that we can always get over them and we can work our way through them. And there's always people to contact and talk with and say, okay, what do we need to do here? You know, okay, this popped up and you can actually work through it all. And so working together as a team, you know, we try to make brand owners successful and try to make them happy.
When you say team, can you elaborate that? Is that salespeople or is that scientists? Who is that team?
So when I mean team, I mean people in accounting, people in legal, people in food scientists, people up at the manufacturing facilities that you're constantly working with and interfacing with. So just because you help a brand, just because you develop a product, you still got to integrate it within your company. You still got to worry about the ingredients. You still got to worry about packaging. You still got to make sure that what we're trying to do can be achieved at the manufacturing facility, the way we want to put the product together. So, I mean, there's a lot of interface throughout the entire process, and it's a long process. I mean, from the time I pick up the phone and talk with an entrepreneur for day one, you know, we're not producing their product for 6 months at the plant because we're working on it the whole way, trying to develop it and integrate it within the facility.
So you really work well cross-functionally with a lot of different people. And with your aseptic and retort experience, you have that ability to work with different types of personalities. And that can be challenging.
Well, I was going to say, you know, you say I work well. I was going to say, well, I think I do. We could really have to ask them to find out how well I work.
That's the next interview. No, get it.
So, how well do you work with people?
You know, it's interesting. So in this time of uncertainty, there's a lot of people who've lost their job, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're at home. As I was sharing with someone, they have families. They've lost their job. And now it's crisis time. What advice would you give for those people?
Yeah, I think I think you have to take a long-term view and, you know, look back over crisis times over the last 20 years, I'm going to say. And for people that are just graduating, you know, college, that are in their early 20s, they may not remember all of them. But for those of us that are a little bit older, if we look over the last 20 years, we've had Y2K, 9/11, we had the global financial crisis, and now we have this coronavirus outbreak. So those are three significant events that have happened in the last 20 years. And the one thing that I look at over the course of those 20 years is when it happens or the immediate time frame after it happens, there's a lot of doom and gloom, there's a lot of pessimism, but we've always come out of it better or stronger than we were prior to that event. So I look at this as the same way. I know it's stressful for many people, this group included, but you know, my approach has always been, you can't change the past. Let's continue to look forward. And you have to work at it every single day. Everybody has down days, but you have to continue to move forward. And if you get caught up in the doom and gloom, sometimes I think you don't have the ability to get out of your own way is the best way I can do it. So getting up in the morning and moving forward, trying to make positive strides and just working at it every single day for me is the key.
It's almost like a job. You have to treat it like a job.
It is, yes. And I think, you know, for me, it's you know, and some other people that I've talked to that are successful at this, you know, it's almost like a daily mental exercise. You can wake up every day and you can say, this is terrible. I don't have a job. I don't know what to do. And other people get up every day and say, okay, we're going to get through this. And they may have a list of 10 or 11 or 12 obstacles that they think they have in front of them. And if you look at it like that and you say, okay, I've got 12 obstacles, I can't overcome 12 obstacles, then it becomes overwhelming. But if you say, okay, my first obstacle is how do I, you know, look for a job? Solve that obstacle for today or the next day or the next week. And then once you solve that, then you tackle the next obstacle. And activity kind of, you know, keeps you going, and it doesn't get you stuck in a situation where it's overwhelming. So just solve one small problem at a time, and then after, you know, 11 or 12 weeks or days, you can take a look back and say, wow, I've solved all 10 problems and it didn't take me as long as I thought it did. It's the old adage, and I don't know if you can use this on this podcast. It's, you know, how do you eat an elephant? You know, one bite at a time. But you have to get started. And a lot of people get caught up in not having the desire, the ability to start. So do something, get started, and then success will build upon itself.
It's great. Daryl.
No, and I think you said it very well. I mean, you said some very great things there. And you know, we've never been through something like this in the war. I mean, we went through 9/11,
right,
where, yeah, all the airliners shut down and everything, and people were stuck in certain areas. I was actually stuck up in Canada out of the country. And so, you know, we had to worry about trying to get back in. But, I mean, that was manageable. And I look at that was such a tragic event, but it didn't impact us as severely as this has impacted us. I mean, this is something that I don't think any of us would have imagined, even Hollywood hadn't imagined yet. Otherwise, right, they would have made a movie about it. So everybody is facing it in different ways. Everybody has their own challenges that they're facing. But you said it very well there. You know, make a list, you know, kind of look at the ones you can tackle, you know, get some small wins, you know. Don't lose hope.
That's a great term. Small wins.
This will turn around. Everybody's going to come out of this, and you may be making some changes, and maybe this is the time for you to make that life changing career move. Maybe this is a blessing in disguise as to, okay, I wasn't all that happy, but hey, I'm going to look over here now and kind of do something different. So, don't get disappointed. Don't get down. I mean, just keep working at it.
Keep going.
And there's a lot of resources out there to help you.
Right.
Absolutely. So, Daryl, I'm going to flip this to you. Let's say, you know, today's world is very different. We've got these graduating seniors, right, that their future's uncertain. When you both were in college, this is not what you were facing, right? Yeah. So let's say you have a college student sitting right here that's getting ready to go to college, but they're questioning, right? Like, do I even go to college? I can't even imagine what they're going through. And you both have children. You know, if you were talking to that senior that's going into college, what advice would you give them?
Well, I think there's a lot of things. And first of all, you know, I feel really bad for all the seniors that are out there. I mean, this definitely changed the way their last year in college went. And it's disappointing that it did, but it's going to make them stronger. They just don't realize that yet. Mm-hmm. They'll look back 5-10 years from now and they'll realize, wow, that you know, I got through that. I can get through anything else.
That's right.
Ask for anybody that's thinking about, you know, whether, you know, well, maybe I shouldn't go on or shouldn't do this. You know, I would say go on. I mean, you always got to have something to fall back on.
Right.
Even if you graduate and you have a finance degree and you say, well, you know what, I don't really want to look at books all the time. I want to rather sell, I'm going to work for, you know, I would rather sell something else. I want to go sell this, you know, well, go sell that for a while, see how it is, but at least you have your finance to fall back on and go on. So you always need to have a backup plan, call it. And that's a backup plan.
And this will pass.
This will pass.
So Christian, what about you? You know, you've got a college senior sitting here. What do you say to them?
Yeah, I mean, you have to kind of be show empathy, I guess, is the best way to say it, and acknowledge the fact that this is not how they imagined it. This is not what they wanted, and it's a challenging situation. However, I think I'll echo a lot of what Daryl said, is have a plan, first of all, and I know sometimes that's difficult to do, but you have to have a plan, and then my advice is always have a backup plan. So continue to work towards executing that plan. Maybe you have a plan B and you have to shift for a little while.
Yeah, and be flexible.
Right. That's the key.
I would have never guessed this is how my career would have taken me in my 30 years from when I graduated. But, you know, it's just being flexible and being open and taking what is given to you.
Right. Yeah. So that's my advice too. And, and continue repeating the message. I think for everybody, especially younger kids that are graduating either from high school or from college, is, have a message that you can repeat daily, weekly, or something with a positive spin on it and say, okay, your career is not over. It's going to be delayed for 4 or 5 or 6 months. And what I told my children is, I know they feel pressure to go out and work. And it's not pressure by the parents. It's kind of self-imposed pressure because they feel like they want to achieve and they want to move forward to the next phase of their life. And they want to do it immediately because we have the ability to get a lot of immediate satisfaction in just the way we interact today. And, that sense of urgency or that sense to do something immediately is challenging only because it's going to be delayed for 3, 4, 5, 6 months. And, looking out and saying, okay, I have to wait is really a challenge. But, again, from my own perspective, with my kids, we make sure that they understand that they're being supported, that there really is no pressure in terms of, having to find a place to sleep, a place to eat, which I know a lot of people are facing right now. And they just have to be patient and continue executing their plan, continue moving forward, and continue trying.
I think that's great. And, one thing that you both said earlier, we were talking about the graduation, and that's such a big deal, right? And I think, Christian, I think it was you that said, what was it? Do you remember your comment about when you said, do I remember, what do you remember about your graduation?
Right.
Can you share that?
Yeah, I'll elaborate a little bit. So when I graduated from undergrad, remember that my parents were there. I remember that I graduated with my roommate, but do I remember any specifics in terms of what we did the day before, the day of? I know I walked up on stage, received my diploma, and shook the dean's hand. And to be quite honest with you, I don't know what we did immediately afterwards.
Right.
And it was just more of let's pack up all our stuff and move on because
we're done. Yeah.
And for me, I had a job to go to, so I immediately went to work, I believe, maybe a week later or even on the following Monday or Tuesday. So I moved on very quickly, but don't remember anything specific about it. And one of the things that I told, my graduating senior was we did something at home over Zoom video. We had some people over, socially distant, of course, and small gatherings, but we tried to make it as exciting as possible. And it turned into a very fun evening. And everybody that was there, and it was a few people, it'll be, a small group of people that will remember that. And 10 years from now, they will remember that night, that activity, and the small gathering of close family and close friends that were there. Whereas me, I really can't have or don't have any specific recall of what happened during that day or two.
Graduating seniors, listen to that message. That's awesome. Do you have anything to add on that one? It's pretty well said, wasn't it?
Yeah, in the same way. Yeah, I mean, I graduated in December, so I was kind of, not at the end of the regular school season, but in between. And, I remember standing there. There was a small group of us that were all graduating in December, but, we walked up, we got the stage, got our degree and stuff, but that was it. Went out to dinner with my mom and dad, and, since I didn't have a job, you had a job, I didn't. So I was still looking. And so, I had made the decision that I was just going to stay up there at the college area because I had a job that I was working during college. I was going to continue to work that job as I was looking for a job. And so I didn't have to worry about moving out and just kept moving forward and waiting to see what was coming.
Got it. So, we're talking about working remotely. There's a lot of people who've done it for years, and now there's a lot of people that have just been thrown into it immediately, not with any notice, just, okay, you're working from home. A lot of those people are struggling. Give us an example of a day in your life of working from home and how you do it. And what, both of you, what is your, what's your pattern? So Daryl, why don't you give us your perspective on that?
Well, so as I said, I did it out when I was with Tetra Pak. I did it for 12 years. And, you know, much like a job where if you're going into an office, you know, we'll use the term 8 o'clock in the morning when, you know, most people expect people to be at work. So you gotta still have a start time at your home office. You still gotta have a time in your mind mentally, and that could be flexible. When I lived out in the West Coast, I actually went in and I was always sitting at my desk at 7 a.m. every morning because I tried to, you know, give a little bit more flexibility for the Mountain, Central, and Eastern Standard Time. But I always had in my mind, okay, I gotta get to the office by 7 o'clock, even though I was just walking down the hallway to another bedroom in my house. You know, I had that routine, and you gotta kind of build those routines within you to make it feel like you're going into an office, and to just keep you productive. If you don't have it, you'll lose sight of everything. And I've known people within my old job where they would go off radar for 4 days, and you're just like, where the heck did this person go? You know, and you
because
don't know
companies do watch that, right? I mean, they kind of keep an eye on that.
Yeah. Yep. So,
you know, and what about laundry? And I'll ask both of you that question. I mean, because no, it's really tempting to do the dishes or to do laundry. You know, and some people can manage that, but some people cannot. So, yeah. What about you?
So I found that to be a very much of a benefit. You know, to do that at home. I mean, mm-hmm. I'd be working in the office. I mean, I could easily run down the hallway, throw in a load of wash, run right back into my office. You know, an hour later. Run right down there, throw it into the dryer. And so I could manage that. I found that to be a benefit to doing it as well as eating lunch at home. I mean, I could easily run downstairs to the kitchen, make myself a sandwich, grab my chips, whatever. I'm done eating lunch, 15 minutes, right back up to my office. Where you have to watch out at is one, hygiene.
Showering is a good thing.
Yeah. It's easy to go 2, 3, 4 days without taking a shower because there's no need to.
You know? Right, but it helps you focus.
Yeah, and also just interfacing with socially. You have to get out. I mean, because you can get locked up in your house.
Isolation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you have to figure out ways, you know, sometimes just to be more creative. Okay, I'm going out to dinner by myself, which can be hard for someone.
I was going
to
say,
yeah, how women don't like doing that.
Yeah,
you know, but you got to do something to get you engaged with what's really going out in the world.
Even when you're traveling, a lot of people will go straight to their hotel. But you were not that person.
I've
right?
never been. Yeah, I don't like eating at the hotels personally.
So you go out.
I usually always go out to a restaurant. But now, you know, in sales, if I'm on the road, my theory, if I'm traveling someplace. If I'm going to travel someplace, I'm going to work exceptionally hard to get whoever I'm traveling to out to dinner that night. Because if I got to be away from home anyway, I'm at least going to make it worth my while. So, you know, I'm going to get them out to dinner where you at least get, you know, 3 hours with them. Just talking socially and getting to know them, build the relationship. I had my manager at the time with Tetra Pak was really about building relationships. You know, he was like, Daryl, you know, if they don't like you, they're not going to buy it from you. So get them to like you.
There you go. What about you, Christian? So what's a day in the life of working remotely or from home?
Yeah, so I tend to be a bit of a cynic when it comes to working from home. And I think that very few people can pull it off successfully. And I think Daryl touched on a lot of things that make him successful in working from home. And I think in this transitional period, what works for people, at least my suggestion would be, is number one, find a separate workspace if you have that ability to do so. And I know people that live in large homes, it's easier, but some of us have to do it in smaller spaces. But try to establish a workspace and communicate that to the rest of the family, whether that's your spouse, your children, or anybody else that happens to be living in that home, and just say, this is my workspace. I have to treat this like I'm going to work. And at 8 o'clock in the morning, I may go to the bedroom and there's a small desk there that I've set up to be able to work from home. I'll close the door. And it's really not okay to come in every 10 or 15 minutes and interrupt because it has to be treated like you're going into the office. So that I think is important. The other things that Daryl mentioned is, you know, it's little things that sound silly, but are important. Take a shower every day. Put on a clean shirt, a decent shirt. Put on You know, maybe not a suit and tie, obviously, but put on comfortable clothes that make you feel like you're going to be at work. So that's important to me. And then really just try to eliminate as many distractions as you possibly can. And in Daryl's case, you know, if you want to go grab lunch, you know, take advantage of the fact that you can take an hour or half an hour and go back into the kitchen, sit down with your family, and really enjoy those moments that you typically wouldn't have the ability to do. And for those people that like to go to the gym or exercise, stick to that routine. You know, go exercise early in the morning. I know the gyms are closed, but if you're a runner or a walker or
hiking, walking, yeah,
whatever you want to do. And if your routine was to do that at 6 a.m. every morning, try to get out and just, you know, establish a routine as much as you possibly can. Make sure that you set limits and parameters for the people that are living in the home with you and they understand that you still have to go to work. It's important to continue moving the economy forward for those of us that have the ability to do so, and really enjoy the flexibility that working from home presents if you don't have that option in your typical life.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you touched upon some additional points there, which are great, and the flexibility is what I loved about it, you know, most of all. And let's face it, you know, when I did it, you know, when we're talking back in, it was from 95 to like 2007, you know, in 95, I'm not even sure. Yeah, cell phones were just starting to come out. They were out by 95. So, I mean, and they were relatively small, but it was still unusual for everybody to have cell phones.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like it is today. You know, you didn't have video conferencing. You know, that wasn't a thing. So, you know, as you said, a clean t-shirt was now. Nowadays, you know, you might have, depending on your job, you might have five or six conferences set up, web conferences set up, where you actually do have to look a lot nicer than just a clean t-shirt that, you know, doesn't have a wore out collar or something that actually looks good. So it's a little different, but I mean, I think for the people that are disciplined enough to be able to get out of bed and do it, there's a huge advantage to it.
Got it. So this podcast, we talk about focus and refocus when executives face adversity. So I want to throw something out at you that you might have experienced or may not have. But let's say you're working from home and you get an email from your boss or from somebody that you really don't know how to read it and you're upset, but you're not working in a corporate environment. How do you handle those things? Because email is a huge issue, right? But if it's coming from your boss, or maybe they're not happy with you, or they're demanding, how do you deal with that? Because I've heard a lot of people struggle with that.
Yeah, so I'll start, you know, and I'm old school. I'd pick up the phone and call the person because...
And you say?
Well, you know, I'd say, you know, Bob or Mike or Sally or Jane, I just received this email from you and I wanted to clarify a couple of points that you had brought up. And I know sometimes it's challenging to communicate via email or text. So I just wanted to make sure that I understand the issue and let's see if there's a way that we can solve it together and really talk with them and find out exactly what the issue is. Because some people just don't communicate as well as others in emails and text messages. I know a lot of things can be misinterpreted in terms of, you know, tone, context, and really how the email is written. And for me, it's really, let's pick up the phone and resolve the issue and hopefully
it's done.
5 or 10 minute conversation, as opposed to sending emails over the next 2 to 3 hours where, you know, that negative momentum and the anger and whatever else you're feeling builds up over time when you can solve it in 5 or 10 minutes. And there's a number of ways to do that. And for me, picking up the phone and actually talking to the person has always worked the best. I know some people don't like that. Maybe they don't like the confrontation or they somehow feel intimidated and don't like that method and would rather email for the next 2 to 3 hours. But, you know, always ask for clarity and really try your best to understand the problem. And then what I've done that has worked with executives is always have a plan, always have a way to solve the problem and a way to help them. So that's been successful for me. If you go into the conversation with, you know, I don't know, I can't help you, I don't have a solution, then that tends to be a challenging conversation. If you say, I understand the problem, here are my suggestions on how we solve it, and here are the two or three that I've come up with on how we move forward, and here's my recommendation for the best solution.
Then that's excellent, because a lot of people, you know, your mind will race, mm-hmm. and you have created a bigger problem than what was actually there.
Right.
Yeah. So, Daryl, what about you? Have you ever had that happen to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's well said, and I think everybody's, of course, different, but too many people read in the emails, mm-hmm. and I don't know if they get worried, get nervous or what, but it seems like so many people gravitate towards the negative side of reading an email instead of, you know, okay, they use three exclamation points. Who cares? Maybe they're happy that day. It doesn't mean that they're mad at you.
Right.
You know.
Or they don't know that you shouldn't do it in all caps. Right.
Right.
Yeah, maybe they're old and this is the way they type. I mean, because a lot of them, not saying anything against older people.
Yeah, we're getting there. Yeah.
There was a time when a lot of people, they didn't like emails. They were forced into emails. And to them, they typed in all caps, mm-hmm. and they didn't get the fact that the younger generation said, well, when you do it in all caps, you're yelling at someone. Well, no, it's just the way I type. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's overread into it. And an excellent suggestion, pick up the phone. Yeah. You know, if you think someone's upset at you, if you think someone's mad, if you think there's a tense situation, pick up the phone. I mean, the company is not paying you $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 to interpret someone's email. They're paying you that kind of money to solve a problem. Mm-hmm. And if you can't solve the problem, then you're probably not going to have that position for that much longer. Right. So pick up the phone, build the relationship with someone. Nothing's always going to be, you're never going to have a relationship with a customer that's always going to be good. You're always going to have some rocks, some waves. You're always going to have issues along the way. And the best way to solve those is hit them head on. And my only comment I'll make, what you also said, you know, here are the steps. You may not have the answers, and that's okay if you don't have the answers right away. Just tell the people, hey, okay, I get you. I hear what you're saying. Let me look into it. I'll give you a call back by the end of the day.
And then the key to that is if you're going to commit to calling back by the end of the day,
follow up.
Make sure you call back by the end of the day.
Yeah. Even if you're calling back and say, hey, I've got part of it. I don't have all of it, but here's what I know so far. I'll get the rest of it tomorrow and I'll get back with you. You know, so yeah, because, you know, so many times what I've told other salespeople that I know is, you know, just flip it around and view yourself in that person's position, you know, and kind of get filled with their feeling right now. And then that's, you know, that's what you got to try to calm them. You got to make them happy and just calm them down.
Exactly. So when we do a poll, we'll ask people what they want us to ask our guests. And the one question that comes up almost every time is facing failure. So can the both of you think back to a time if you've ever faced failure, and how have you pulled yourself out of it?
Well, I think I'll use the cliche. I can tell you that I've learned more from failures than, you know, have from success. And I know that sounds terrible. But I think it's important to fail. I think the lessons that you learn from failure are more important than the lessons that you learn from success. And I think failure really forces you to figure out a way to come up with new and different solutions. And I told people that I've worked with all the time is it's better to make the wrong decision than no decision.
Right.
And if you make the wrong decision, which will happen to all of us, have a plan on how to fix it. Don't make the wrong decision and then panic and say, oh my God, I made the wrong decision. My life is over. My career's over, or whatever you want to use to do that is say, okay, I screwed up. Let's minimize the damage and let's have a path to fix it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I agree. So I mean, if you have a problem with failing, then I would suggest go out and find a really rich spouse and marry him, because you can't continue in career without failing. It just happens that way. As I said 100 times, the simplest things, even drinking from water from a glass, you're not going to be 100% of the time. You're not going to spill on yourself. You know, there's going to be that every once in a while you're going to spill on yourself, and that's easy. So, of course, a complex issue, you're going to have problems. You're going to fail every once in a while, and that's fine. Learn from it, you know, take notes and move on and remember it.
And that's, don't dwell on it.
Yeah, don't dwell on it. Yeah, I mean, in my days, we used to have to do a lot of cold calling. And right. I remember having a cold call on people, and, you know, you never even talked to them before in your life. So the whole thing is, you know, if I can just get 3 minutes on the phone with them to at least present, but sometimes that was hard. And I would have a notepad, and I'd call the first person, and you know, it wouldn't go good. You know, I was down, off of the phone in 45 seconds. All right, well, that line didn't work. Let me try a new line. And you just, you know, you keep on going time and time again. And after about 15 times of it, you've got a nice paragraph that where you can almost guarantee they're at least going to give you 3 minutes. Right. And if they're interested, they're going to say, okay, let's set up a time next week and let's talk. You know, if they're not, that's fine. Move on. That wasn't a failure. You know, you presented something, they weren't interested, and that's good. That's still a success because you were able to present your plan.
Got it. Two last questions for you guys. I could talk to you for hours, but decision-making. A lot of people struggle with that. What is your process of, you know, having a difficult situation and having to make a decision? Mm-hmm. How do you go about that?
So I'll pull something obscure here. I live by a principle, but try to at least apply to something called Occam's razor. And if you look that up in Wikipedia, they'll give you a much better explanation than I will. But basically what it says is that assuming that there are two equal solutions to a problem, the simplest one is the better one. So my decision-making, involves taking a look at the potential solution and picking the simpler one. And 9 times or maybe even 10 times out of 10, you'll be more successful than if you pick the more complex solution. And I'll give you an example to that. I think we talked about this the other day. So back in the 60s, when the Russians and the Americans were competing to get to the moon first in the space race, one of the things that they tried to solve was how do you write in space in a zero gravity environment? So the Americans took the approach of inventing a pen that was pressurized so that the ink would flow even in a zero gravity environment. And if you want to try this, go buy a big pen and try writing upside down. It'll be successful for about 10 seconds and then the ink runs out and you can't write anymore. And they call this thing the Fisher Space Pen. And if you look up the history, it's out there. The Russians had the same problem and they took a different approach. They used a pencil.
There you go.
So
there you go. Use a crayon.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, that principle, if you look at it, the Fisher Space Pen was very elegant. It was an absolute engineering marvel and a fantastic solution. They spent millions developing this thing and actually sold it. You can buy one today if you like. And the Russians used the pencil. It accomplished the same thing. It moved the needle a little bit quicker because using a pencil took about 10 seconds to solve. Developing this pen took months to solve, when that engineering talent and that mentality could have been used to make the rocket go faster, you know, be more reliable or anything like that. So I think some valuable lessons can be learned from that, but I always like that example.
I love that. And, you know, Daryl, you're an engineer, so I cannot wait to hear how you go about making the decision.
You know, some of the same things. I mean, I learned early on, you know, the decision you have to make, you know, whatever the problem is presented, it may not be the most obvious thing, but solve the simplest thing first. And sometimes the simplest thing ends up being the whole issue. Hmm. Otherwise, when it comes down to some other decisions, I mean, it goes back to what we were just talking about, failing. I mean, sometimes you just got to pick a path and go down it, and it may be the right one, it may not be the right one, but you learn from it and move on and keep growing as you get older. Don't be afraid to make the wrong decision. It happens.
Definitely. So I'm sure people are wondering, you guys have been friends for how long and how did you meet?
I don't know how long, I don't know when we first met.
Almost 20 years, yeah.
20 years, yeah. Yeah.
You don't live in the same area right now.
No. Yeah. So I worked with his ex-wife at Tetra Pak, and that's how we met.
Yeah, and we have a common interest, you know, on the side. We both like to drink wine, and that was really the impetus to the introduction. Yeah. I know when I was told about Daryl, he's like, he lives out in California, and he enjoys wine, and I know I do, so we had some common interest right there and have
that's all it took.
Yeah, yeah, and, that's what it and took, really. As we grow older, it takes an effort, right? To keep that that friendship alive, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, we travel, you know, we both kind of travel in areas. We've met out in California. We met in Germany once.
Yep, sure did.
So, you know, our jobs have crossed paths. I get up to Chicago quite a bit for shows. And so at least once a year, we're out for at least dinner someplace.
Yep.
You know, and so, yeah, but, you know, if you want something, if something's worthwhile, you know, you got to take some effort to keep it going.
Absolutely. Who in your life has been your role model?
No, my wife, of course.
That's a perfect answer, actually. I love that. But seriously, who has made, I don't know if you're serious or joking, but Ines is actually Daryl's my husband. So, but we didn't really clarify that. But really, no, who's been the best role model?
I've had so many along the way. I can't think of just one that stands out. But I've had so many great managers over the time that have helped me, that have given me great advice. I've had some great professors. You know, my parents, you know, have given me some great advice. My brothers have given me both good and bad advice. So I'm not sure which one outweighs the other. And of course my, lovely wife who's given me some great advice and I keep getting good advice from her. So, I don't have just one person that stands out. I have so many.
Awesome. Okay. Christian, what about you?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, like Daryl said, you know, you take a look at your parents and, you know, I'd like to think that my parents did a lot of things right. You know, what you learn from them is that, you know, nothing's easy. Nothing's going to be handed to you. And you have to work at pretty much everything. And, you know, even keeping friendships alive is important. And effort gets you a long way towards your goals. And then I think early on when I was in college, I was an athlete and a rower. And, you know, one of the coaches that I met early on was an Olympic athlete. And he really kind of instilled a work ethic and the mindset that there are a lot of talented people out there, but work will overcome and beat talent virtually every time. So that was very early on. And then, like Daryl said, there's one or two managers along the way that challenged me. And I think the ones that challenged me are the ones that you remember. And the ones that were demanding are the ones that, again, you remember. But the best ones and the ones that I would use as role models were always demanding. They were always fair and they were always consistent. And I think those three elements for me are very big, and I try to do that. And there's probably one or two people that I would recall to do that. And that's what I've tried to do when I mentor other people as well. So
I love that. That's great. Daryl, you have always mentioned something that you put in all graduating seniors' cards. Can you share that?
I believe the gentleman's name is Brian Dyson, and he was a CEO of Coca-Cola at one time, and he made a commencement speech. To me, it just really made sense, and I've always loved it. And it talks about I don't know if he originated it or if he copied it from somebody else. I mean, there's many theories out there on the internet, and all you got to really do is Google Brian Dyson and graduation speech, and it'll pop right up. But it talks about the balance of work life, and it talks about, you know, four balls, and you have four balls in life, you know, the whole point of it is you got to try to juggle them, and it's work, it's health, it's family. I'm not sure. I can't remember what the fourth ball is at the last minute, but anyway, what he's saying is your family ball is the one, I think it's the family one. It's a hard ball with the rest of rubber. So if you do something wrong at work, you know, you may drop the work ball, but it's going to bounce back. You know, and you're going to bounce back some other ones. But family, you know, if you drop it, you know, you scuff it. And, you know, the more times you drop that, you know, you continue to scuff it and you continue to create damage within that. So It's a great commencement speech.
And then you put the $100 in there, right?
So as you said, yeah. So I usually print it off. I usually take a $100 bill. I fold it up inside it, and then I stick it in the card. So the card actually looks like it has nothing in it. If the graduate is smart enough to open it up
and read it,
$100. I think I've probably had a couple that have probably thrown it away because I never got a thank you back from them. So they probably just opened it up and saw something to read and said, oh, I'll get to it later, and never got to it and threw the $100 away.
So, but it's their journey.
It's their journey.
It's their journey. So, gentlemen, we always ask this question to all of our guests, and it's interesting because I hear all different kinds of answers. But let's say you've got that really big important meeting, or maybe it's a date, or maybe it's something that you know you've just got to have game on, right? You've got to have game on, and you get in your car and you turn music on. What is it that you listen to when you get in the car, Christian?
Yeah, so it's U2. I still haven't found what I'm looking for. No, that's a joke. Yeah,
I do like that.
Right, yeah, it's a great song.
That's a whole memory for me. I'll tell you about that later.
Right. But yeah, or the Rolling Stones. You can't always get what you want. Those are the two, right? But no, seriously. Again, you know, I was a competitive athlete all the way through college, and back in, I don't know, this may have been in the early 90s. I don't even remember when the movie came out. But it was a movie called Vision Quest, and it was about a wrestler that was trying to beat the current state champion and undefeated a kid that he had always lost to. And there's a song in the final scene called "Lunatic Fringe" by Red Raider. So if you play that song and associate it with the movie, for me, that kind of gets me pumped up. And then, anything by AC/DC, I think. And, being from Chicago as kind of a third choice is the introduction song of the Chicago Bulls. If you ever go listen to that, I think it's kind of inspiring.
Love it. Daryl, what about you?
First off, great soundtrack, great movie, and great song. Those are really good. I mean, I have a lot, but probably one that really energizes me and pumps me up the most, and I'm a little bit of a metalhead from back in the 80s, is Metallica, Fuel. And I mean, it's just a really fast-paced song, right. But I mean, and I didn't really realize what it did to me until I remember one time I was working out, and I was on the treadmill, and I'm running away, and I'm getting tired, and all of a sudden the song pops on my earbuds, and not earbuds, back then it was headphones, let's face it. And man, I mean, it just energized me. And ever since then, I was like, oh, it's such a great song. It just lights me up for some reason. But then I had tons of other songs, but that's one that really comes to my mind.
That's great. And listen, all of the information that you provided, I can guarantee you have inspired someone today by your advice. So thank you both for joining us today. We're so thrilled. If you want to know more about Christian or Daryl, we'll put it on our website. But again, thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. It was fun.
Yeah.
This podcast is sponsored by A. Stevens & Associates, an executive search firm that places C-suite executives in the pharmaceutical, biotech, consumer, food, and nutrition industries. You can find more at astevensandassociates.com.